This is WSKG News. Ithaca College students released the results of a confidence vote in their college president Monday. President Tom Rochon has faced criticism and protests from students and faculty for his handling of racial incidents and what some call top-down leadership. Rochon spoke to WSKG's Solveig Wastvedt.
Thanks so much for taking the time to do this. I really appreciate it. I'd like to know, how do you feel about all the activism that's been bubbling up lately here at the college?
Well, first, thank you, Solveig. I'm glad to have an opportunity to have this conversation. As it happens, I was a social movement scholar back when I was a professor. And I feel that activism in general creates the opportunity to have dialogue and create changes that you cannot normally do. In this case, people don't like to talk about race and racial bias, especially white people, but we're having that conversation on this campus now, and that can only lead to good things in terms of a better climate of inclusiveness.
So recently, in response to some of the protests, I believe you appointed a chief diversity officer, and that position, as I understand it, reports directly to you. So how do you make sure that other people on campus also have input into the initiatives that that person will carry out?
Well, the reality is that for many years, we've had initiatives related to diversity in every corner of the college, from enrollment to student life, to faculty teaching activities. And those are very dispersed across our divisions. With a chief diversity officer, we now have only two people at the college whose portfolio spans the entire college, me and the chief diversity officer. The job of the chief diversity officer is, more than anything else, to pull together and be accountable for all of these initiatives that already exist and are being created across the campus.
Sure. So, like, will there be, I guess, what are the concrete ways? Will there be meetings? Will there be surveys, that sort of thing?
The chief diversity officer has already started sending messages to the campus community on a weekly basis. Here's where we are. Here's what we're doing. Here's what's coming up. And in response is getting all kinds of input from the campus. In addition, there are a number of established committees as well as informal dialogues that the chief diversity officer is involved in.
So I know that in another effort to improve the climate, you've said that all the new faculty starting in February are going to have to get diversity or cross-cultural awareness training. So how do you make sure that everybody, all the faculty, participate in that, even faculty who already have tenure?
What we've actually said is that new faculty coming in as part of their faculty orientation will have an enhanced diversity and inclusion part of their orientation. We had already touched on that in the past, but we're going to expand that significantly to a bigger part of the overall orientation. With respect to continuing faculty, our goal is to have programs within each department that enables faculty to pose issues that come up for them. Let's say a student makes a comment in class that clearly has an offensive element to some other students. A faculty member often feels uncertain how best to respond to that without taking the class off topic and down a path that they don't want it to go. So we're hoping that these workshops for all faculty will give them the tools that they want to have in order to be effective in those very difficult moments in a classroom.
Mm-hmm. What about if a faculty member isn't interested in this kind of workshop and doesn't want to take the training? Is it a requirement?
We, with respect to faculty, are not in a position to literally require every faculty member to have to go through a training exercise. What we can do and will do is state our expectations that all faculty have a strong cross-cultural competence that enables them to function effectively as teachers in the classroom and as mentors to all of our students. That expectation should create the motivation in any faculty member to get what they need in order to meet the expectation.
What about for a faculty member who at this point is already tenured? Can you, for people who don't really know about the governance of a college, is there any kind of accountability that you can put on a faculty member like that?
So accountability, contrary to some popular perception, does not end with tenure. Every class that a faculty member teaches will still have student responses, and usually in the form of a survey that come in. commenting on the faculty members' ability to teach the course materials effectively and to mold the class into an effective learning environment. So those, in turn, play into annual reviews. It's true that in order to lose one's job, there needs to be very serious derelictions of duty or loss of expertise or ability in the classroom. But there are still annual evaluations, and those annual evaluations are connected to salary increases and are connected to a department's understanding of how this faculty member is contributing to the departmental goals. We should never underestimate peer pressure as one aspect that spurs all faculty to be the very best teachers they can be.
So I think you've also said that you have some plans for working with the sociology and anthropology and the race and ethnicity departments on improving the climate. So can you expand on that? Do you know what that looks like at this point?
We have a great deal of expertise on this campus with respect to diversity and inclusion, with respect to understanding the kinds of microaggressions that over time, cumulatively, can make students or staff or faculty feel like they're not a completely welcome part of the campus community. And we plan to tap that expertise in a number of ways. Some of the workshops we run will be run by faculty members or other staff on campus for whom this is their professional expertise. In addition, we know that we need to create more counseling resources for students so that they know if they encounter something that simply feels to them like it's non-inclusive, they know what to do, where to go. And that counseling, that mentorship expertise will also probably come from within our existing campus staff and faculty.
Now, this actually is a perfect segue to the next question, because I know that if there aren't enough faculty of color or faculty who feel for whom students feel they can relate, that can be a problem. And so you've said that you're also interested in increasing your percent of faculty of color. So what does that look like? What's your goal for a percent?
Well, I wouldn't phrase it as a goal for a percentage of faculty so much as a goal of being as vigorous as we can be in diversifying the faculty and the staff. There's a fundamental disparity between the fact that 25% of our students are new to the campus every year, but only about 4% of faculty and 5% of staff, which means that the diversity of our student body has changed very rapidly, while the diversity of our faculty and staff has changed only slowly because they turn over so much more slowly. But we've had some successful programs, including for faculty, a pre-doc program that brings faculty pre-faculty members to campus to do a little bit of teaching while they finish their dissertations. They then know about us and we know about them, and they become very strong candidates in faculty searches once they've completed their doctoral dissertations and they're ready to assume a full-time faculty job.
And do you target that program at a specific type of faculty member?
I'm sorry, yes, I should have mentioned the pre-doc program is for faculty members from underrepresented racial and ethnic groups.
Okay. So again, for somebody who isn't as familiar as you are with college governance, what would be a realistic target for a percent of faculty members, given, as you say, that they turn over much more slowly?
Well, we hire about 20 to 25 full-time faculty in a typical year. So you can see that the numbers and change is not going to be large. That said, we have found in recent years that approximately a third of those faculty members have been faculty of color, which is diversifying our faculty over time. Some years the number is a little bit higher, some years the number is a little bit lower, but the our goal is simply to be very intentional in moving the needle on faculty diversity.
So let's transition a little bit maybe towards more financial issues. You've trimmed the staff in the past 2 years by about 40 each year. So have you also considered, or have you done any trimming in the administration to go along with that? Would that help save costs?
Oh, well, the staff trimming that you're talking about has been staff and administration. The one thing we've left untouched is the numbers of faculty, but we've had some position reductions at all levels of the organization, right up to associate vice presidents and associate provosts. So it's been a very thorough review. what we found when we looked at our organization was, as is true so many places, the organization grew over time. We would take on a new function, build a new program, build out a certain capacity within the college, and we would create a whole new structure and a whole new staff to do that particular thing. It's kind of like building a house, a very large house, one room at a time over a period of decades. The architecture probably isn't going to be pleasing, and the plumbing and electricity is going to be a complete mess. So by looking at our organization with fresh eyes, asking, what are we trying to accomplish, and how can we accomplish those goals most efficiently, we found that we had a great deal of redundancy that could be reorganized and then with positions eliminated without in any way affecting the quality of the educational experience.
And so one of those positions that is gone now is, I'm not sure of the exact title, but isn't it the Vice Provost for Student Life?
A Vice President for Student Affairs.
Okay, there we go. So what was your thinking in eliminating that position?
That wasn't actually an efficiency elimination. That was more of a desire to align our organization with our goals. We used to have one Vice President for Academic Affairs and one Vice President for Student Affairs, which meant student life, organizations, sports, and so forth. We now have a single Vice President for Educational Affairs, which recognizes that the education at a residential college like Ithaca College is composed of all of the experiences students have on campus, not only academic, but also in the residence halls and when they get involved in an organization or when they join a sports team. We have, for example, and this has led to a lot of changes, we have, for example, a leadership academy among our varsity athletes that enables them to think about the life lessons they're learning by pursuing the sport that they love. Lessons about teamwork, lessons about leadership, discipline, learning how to win, learning how to lose, taking lessons from both of those sets of experiences. That's a very powerful thing for students, and when we make students aware of the opportunities, not just to be engaged in something they're interested in, but to learn from these campus experiences, and they're aware from their first year as undergraduates, it becomes a much more powerful part of the total educational experience.
So if students or if faculty, I suppose this would be students, feel that they've lost a person that they can communicate with in the administration, where should they be going to voice those concerns?
Well, they're voicing those concerns everywhere, including to me, but it's been a persistent myth on campus. There is a senior associate vice president, actually now an associate provost for student life, to whom the students have the same degree of access and who has the same degree of access to the leadership team. There's only one relevant change here, and that is that everyone in student affairs and student life now considers themselves to be an integral part of the total student educational experience.
Mm-hmm. So this is more about your general philosophy as a president, but how much do you think a leader like yourself should rely on input coming from the campus, coming from faculty, students, staff?
Well, at the highest level, the vision and the educational mission of the college belongs to the Board of Trustees, and I'm accountable to them for putting that mission into practice. And issues such as how to organize the senior leadership team, for example, flow directly from that. I don't feel that student or staff or faculty input should tell me what the identities of vice president should be, to name something very specific. That said, input is very important for understanding how the educational experience is actually lived by students. So when members of the Student Government Association say that they don't think they have enough access to the leadership the way they did back when there was a vice president for student affairs, my response to that is not to create or recreate a vice president for student affairs, but rather to find ways of increasing that access within a structure that makes sense for our mission.
So do you think there are some decisions? Sounds like maybe there are. Are there some decisions that you have to make, that you just have to make, and why would that be?
Well, since I'm accountable for the college achieving its educational mission, Accountability without responsibility is a very dangerous plank to walk on. So I do need to be responsible for the structure of the leadership team and the composition of the leadership team. I need the right leaders doing the right things in order to achieve the mission for which I am accountable.
Mm-hmm. What have you learned as a president over the past couple months?
Well, it's been an opportunity to do a lot of introspection, of course, on effective leadership. And one thing that I've resolved is to be much more directly visible on the campus to a variety of groups and sort of directly in a listening posture. Again, I think there are things that people can't literally dictate from the campus, such as who should be in certain leadership positions or how those leadership positions should be configured. But in terms of our goals and whether we are effectively achieving our goals, people on campus are the experts on that. Students are experts on that. Staff are experts on that. Faculty are experts on that. And I can learn a lot more from them.
Mm-hmm. So when you look back over the past, has it been 8 years, over the past 8 years as president, is there anything that you look back and you say, "What now? Knowing what I know now, I would have done that differently?"
Oh my gosh, I could probably name 20 or 25 things that fall into that category. As with anything in life, leadership is a constant learning experience. It's constantly humbling. I think the only leader who doesn't make any mistakes must be way too modest in terms of their what they're trying to accomplish with their leadership. So there are specific things I would do differently just because I have hindsight. And then there are general lessons on leadership and how it works that would lead me to do everything differently just because I have 8 years of experience in this role.
Is there some, can you get to some another of the general lessons maybe?
Sure. I think the one of the main stresses of being a leader is figuring out how to allocate your time among many worthy contenders for your time. I work about 65 hours a week, sometimes a little more than that when it's an intense week for one reason or another. But I think of it as there are about 130 to 140 hours of genuinely worthwhile things to do. So there's a weekly choice to be made in terms of which 65 hours worth do I do. And in a sense, there's a built-in sense of failure if you focus on the other 65 to 70 hours that you did not do. There are a number of pressures and pulls that take a president off campus. Fundraising is probably the most notorious of them, but simply being the face of the institution elsewhere and keeping the alumni network feeling connected to Ithaca College is also an important factor. The balance between off-campus and on-campus activities, and for that matter, the balance of answering emails directly from one's office versus simply walking around and having chance but rich encounters with people, is a balance in which you're always going to lose. You're always going to not do enough of something. But one of my biggest lessons has been that in that balance, I can probably let my inbox sit longer. And in fact, maybe some messages go unanswered or be answered by someone else rather than to the extent that that enables me to be out and visible to people more.
So we have two confidence votes coming up, one by the students this Monday and one by the faculty that starts on Monday. So if one or both of those votes came up no confidence, how would you interpret something like that?
Well, to me, a great deal hinges on the thinking behind the no confidence votes and not just the outcomes of the votes themselves. It's not literally an election. I should be very clear that the communications about the no confidence votes, in a sense, go directly to the Board of Trustees, which has responsibility for evaluating the president and deciding if the existing president is the right person going forward. I've been clear that I don't intend to resign because of no confidence votes or because of the voices that have been raised. My feeling is that as long as the board wants me to be president and as long as I think I'm able to lead the college forward in the opportunities that we have, that I am going to continue in this office.
Is there any situation that would move you to resign?
it would be the point, absent the board telling me, and of course they can just tell me, it would be the point at which I conclude that I can't lead the college forward.
And so at this point, you feel like you have all the tools you need to do that?
I'm coming to work with great energy and focus right now.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for talking with me today. I appreciate taking the time.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed this conversation.